Yeah, okay. First, let me thank David and the organizers for taking me from here to there. And to be honest, it's picture from September, but how it looks like in January, it's something like that. This minus 20 degrees Celsius. It's quite cold. That's it's a small village, Chernogolovka, in Moscow region. It's just a back view from the institute. That was the view of the institute. Okay, that's the institute, small building. I will discuss some issues of the heavy quark potentials in QCD and strings in higher dimensions. It's a subject I have been working on for last maybe 6 years, and today I will just give you some points mainly about the heavy quark potentials. And my local motivation for this talk was the talk given by Mike Tepper last week, and he told us about strings in four, mainly in 2+1 dimensions, and also some comments about strings in four dimensions and lattice simulation for that. I will focus on another approach, that's approach which use strings in 5 dimensions and 10 dimensions, and mainly motivated by ADS-CFT correspondence and really some old ideas by Polyakov about the Liouville field as an extra dimension. So my plan is, I just remind you very few basic facts about the phenomenological Carnell model. I will need it later, and some formulas from the four-dimensional strings concerning the potentials. Then I will present three briefly basic examples. First, the heavy quark potential, then the baryonic potential, and finally some hybrid potentials. And then I will conclude with non-traditional way by giving my global motivations for doing strings in QCDs. Okay, let me proceed. Okay, so first, what is known for a long time is the Cornell model. It's amazingly, just feel free to interrupt me to discuss. It's amazingly simple model, and the point that it works. And what is the simplest is it contains really two terms. So just take a Coulomb term and add a linear term. That's linear term comes from strings and Coulomb just from perturbative QCD, and C is just a normalization constant. And the model has 3 parameters, kappa, A, and C, and these parameters can be adjusted from the Chernomanian spectrum, for example. Just example to get an idea order of magnitude for this parameter. And that was invented long time ago and was inspiration really for strings in 4 dimensions. So why? Because it's certainly a strange term, and one can just try to get the Coulomb term as a correction to the string term, and then probably will the whole story. But certainly it's not. So what happens in 4 dimensions with strings? Here, 4 dimensions, it's a point that it's all the things is going in flat 4-dimensional space. It's Euclidean 4-dimensional space. So D is just 4. I just took it as from the paper of Lusher Weiss, is arbitrary, but it's really d equal 4. Okay, and then what's going on here? Just one of the attempt to get these four novels by Lusher and Weiss, and what they computed? They computed the determinant of d minus two free scalar fields on a cylinder, two-dimensional cylinder. So that's contribution from one loop, really. And of course, one can say that it's done because we have by this linear term and also Coulomb term. And by the way, this Coulomb term agrees with the lattice more or less. And then people found that also it depends which action one uses, and really there are one over r corrections, and that's opposite. And this correction is tricky because one has to add new terms to the two-dimensional effective action, and this new terms in general comes with independent coefficients, so it's really will add many new parameters into the game. That's the first point, and the second point, that the Lusher-Weiss formula is nothing else as a series and powers on 1 over r. So it comes from strings to Coulomb, really. So it's might be many, many corrections. And then, of course, natural question to ask whether this Coulomb term is the same as in the kernel model, because in kernel model, the trick is not clear how to treat it, whether it's correction to the linear term or it's some another term is which comes from short distances. And in the literature, there's another suggestion.
Mm-hmm. He actually knows they're totally different. I mean, if you look at the Cornell model, mm-hmm. you go to short distances to see the longer arc. You want to get the loose shapes, or you have to X carefully go to large distances. Mm-hmm. They're both in the data.
Yeah, that's right, but that's some mystery, you see, because Lusher-Weiss comes like then what to do with 1 over r cube corrections, for example. Yeah, but that means that there's some kind of UV infrared correspondence.
Which you can have. Expansion,
short distance,
expansion
one. That's right, but still I will show you later that there is for potential also linear term at short distances that is different from the quantum. Okay, then there's a square root formula about Arvest, and this formula just tried to really resum all these corrections you see here. So it's really one, if one expanded in series of 1 over r squared, that's very similar to the Lusher-Weiss. So I will also refer to this. And this contains also the normalization constant and the string tension. Okay. Now, the main point, what we can learn from another perspective. And from another perspective, first let me give you heuristic argument how the fifth dimension comes out from the string theory point of view. So it's useful to consider a Faraday picture of fluxes, but starting not from short distances, but from long distance. So at long distances, quark and a quark pair, and then string flux that connects it. So that's what string picture. So if I will try just absolutely in bold way to write down a Coulomb kind of potential in the Faraday picture, it looks like this one. So we have different fluxes, and then point if this, all these fluxes contribute in a similar way, then means that product of string tension times length should be constant, like invariant, so it's equally important. That means that to reproduce Coulomb picture, one has to add new strings with higher tensions, sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma 3. That's also more or less clear from the Cornell potential. Let me just draw the picture. So that's original tension potential that comes from sigma 0. And then really what happens, we want to reproduce Cornell model. So it must go like this way. So I will add fragments, but with more larger and larger slopes. And these fragments, since nothing else, one can interpret as the strings with higher tensions. And so on. So that's how the fifth dimension can appear. That means that if you want to probe shorter distances with strings, we can try to introduce an ensemble of strings with different tensions. That really means a new interpretation of a fat string, as the latest people call it, at short distances. And from that picture, a fat string is just a collection of thin strings, but of different tensions. So it is as drawn here. Then a natural question to ask is, what is the spectrum for this string tensions? That's really the most question important. And the three options. First, continuous spectrum of sigmas. And this continuous spectrum, that's what Polyakov likes, because he says that the Liouville field can be treated as a fifth dimension, so it's very close to this picture. But also, one can introduce a discrete spectrum of the string tensions and then define generalized Veneziano models, as we did with Warren Hill. And difference with original models that these generalized models reproduce the right hard scattering limit exactly as in QCD. So it's a real power law behavior instead of soft behavior. And now a big question to ask, whether quantum fluctuations in four dimensions, as I discussed before and was discussed by Mike Tepper, are the same as this geometry modification in fifth dimension or in introduction of ensemble of string with different tensions also in fifth dimension, whether it's the same. It's really a priori not clear, because I will get the same result as in four dimension and four dimensional lattice gate theory by just using classical consideration in fifth dimension. And of course, it's very difficult to treat strings with continuous, with discrete spectrum. It's much easier to continuous and then just encode this string spectrum, string tension spectrum, into five dimensional metric. So now it's time. I want to show you what the metric is. And this metric I will use, it's in the literature called the soft wall metric model. So how it looks like, it's five-dimensional Euclidean background metric. And then it just really one parameter deformation of a DS5. And the deformation comes from the non-trivial warp factor HZ. And this HZ is very simple, just exponent C, where C is dimension lambda QCD square times Z square. And Z is the fifth coordinate that's really merged string tension, effective string tension. So you can read from here immediately effective string tension. It depends on z, and then it looks like this exponent z square times this sum. Okay, and then of course in this five-dimensional approach, if I use geometric, z becomes dynamical, so it's also additive contribution. And what is the fun with this model? You see, it contains only three free parameters, exactly as a kernel model. So that's deformation parameter lambda QCD, then R square, you can consider it as a DS5 radius, and also will contain a normalization constant. So now some history about this model. Really, I was not the first in this. To my knowledge, it's a first attempt to deform a DS5 in a similar way was done by Hirn and Satz, but they consider a little bit different deformation with z to the fourth. And idea was to reproduce the gluon condensate in ideas. But then Son and company came with a really five-dimensional model that contains not only deformation of the metric, but also non-trivial dilaton, and they really consider both deformation, the metric, and dilaton. But finally, they decided in favor of ADS5, but this non-trivial dilaton background. So in the literature, that calls the soft wall dilaton model. In some examples, it's the same, but in some examples, they're quite different. And really, what is fun with the soft wall models, both the metric and the dilaton, is that if you will try to solve five-dimensional Young-Mills equations, then you will find that at the end of the day, the equation is reduced to the Laguerre differential equation, which is exactly solvable, and spectrum of the Kaluza-Klein mod is Erdős-like. That's very important, but you can it was found absolutely independently 5 years before, just by looking for a field equation on ADS5 and asking a question how to deform it to get the Erdős kind of spectrum without any reference to metric or dilaton background. That's just quite a general statement. And then it allows to get some estimate for this parameter C, deformation of ADS5, in terms of the Rho-Mezen-Reggett trajectory. So if one interprets Rho-Mezen as coming from the fifth dimension of Young-Mills, then, as a Kaluza-Klein mod, of course, then it's possible to get an estimation for C. It's order of 1 GV squared, really, from the Rho-Mezen radial excitations. So that's some more. Now, example number one, heavy quark potential. So in this business, really, there are three things to postulate. First is just background. That's I postulate. Then number two, really two-dimensional effective action. That's in my case number one. And then number three is just how to compute the expectation value of Wilson loop. Yeah, just I will use a proposal by Ray Maldacena, so to compute in five dimension expectation value of Wilson loop, one has to consider minimal surfaces in fifth dimension, and this boundary ended on the Wilson loop, which lives on the boundary of this five-dimensional space. After this model is really defined, nothing else, no freedom. After that, just doing this exercise, this minimal areas, one can get the heavy quark potential in a parametric form as here. Then that was done by me and Valentin Zakharov. So this lambda is a parameter, C is a deformation of ADS5, it's parameter of the model, and fortunately this ADS5 radius is combined with alpha prime from Nambu-Goto. So it's really not four parameters, but it gives one dimensionless parameter G. I will discuss it later. So the potential is here, and our idea was whether it reproduces the Cornell model or not. So how it looks like now, let me give you a picture. So it's indeed linear at larger distances and looks like Coulonic at short distances. Unfortunately, this model is very simple I'm discussing. It allows many analytical results. So, for example, like here, it's easy to estimate the asymptotic behavior at large distances, so it's really linear, plus this renormalization constant, plus corrections, and the string tension is given by this formula. And at short distances, it's Coulomb term, exactly as in the Maldacena calculation, but then comes a linear term and plus correction. And this funny thing that this linear term is present at short distances, but it's the tension is not the same as at large distances. So it's difference between sigma naught and sigma is maybe 20%. It's also possible to estimate analytical results. And then now you see this sigma linear term at short distances make a difference from the Cornell model. It's not exactly the Cornell model. So now I told you that we use the Cornell model, it was our goal, but of course there are two more options, the lattice data and the heavy meson spectrum. We can really do it independently because, as I told you, three free parameters. C, ADS5 deformation, this G, coupling, and then renormalization. So first, the lattice data. In this case, one gentleman tried to solve the inverse problem. And the inverse problem is just starting from the lattice, try to find the five-dimensional background which reproduces the lattice data through the Nambu-Goto action. Okay, then that guy tried at least four or five known in the literature. And what happens, you see? Our model enormously good reproduced the lattice data. That was a big surprise. That was not what we planned, but that's how it works. It's just, again, at short distances, you see. And then at ledges. Much better than all others in the literature. It's a mystery. Five-dimensional mystery.
That one of the other curves?
That's from another ADS five deformations.
Is the Cornell fit there somewhere or no?
No, as I told you, no. So that's the lattice. Okay, then one can do the meson spectrum directly from this potential without any reference to lattice or Cornell. That also was done numerically, of course. That's, let me show you, that was done by group in Bari Here is just they use to compute the heavy meson spectrum from our potential plus some spin dependent terms and others. And what happens, and using the Salpeter equation, so it's very basic. What happens that here is just theoretical, what was computed with this potential. And this experiment, and you see that difference really very narrow. That's how this five-dimensional model works. Okay, then now a question to for the lattice gauge theorist. Question is this. I don't need it. I can reproduce the meson spectrum. I can.
No, it's a very careful measurement of all that.
I understand.
Large R, which is a resolution.
Yeah. But I have potential that's on the lattice. That's
the comment. You get the same quality of fit with the hard wall model. So it's not very.
It's not the hard wall model.
I know, but I'm saying the hard wall model is almost the same.
I don't know. I'm not sure that it's Hartwald model. I have never seen something like that for the Hartwald model. You should show me. Yeah, you should show me. It'll give me a reference. Yeah. Yeah?
This is pure SU3 glue. So
yeah, that's here. Exactly.
Those simulations are difficult. I mean, actually, to do on a PC. Mm-hmm. But the ones with the up, down, the strange quark, those are. Mm-hmm. More difficult to do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, that's this lattice is known, but it's the data from I think Zomer and.
Because okay. They tried to actually reproduce the lattice data in five-dimensional models. Usually, you need a dilaton. Of course, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, the lattice, if you very carefully, I believe, one sees the logarithmic running at the short distances as well. So you can actually see deviations.
Yeah, no. You see. No, I just show you. That's a mistake. You see, at short distances it works. And then point, this logarithmic terms is this UV renormalon that resume in the linear term at short distances. That's another point.
I'm guessing I believe that people have seen that.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I mean, the lattice can be, in principle, improved ad infinitum. Mm-hmm. This model has three parameters, and you have no way of estimating the theoretical errors or improving it.
Yeah.
In that sense,
no. Yeah, but then still I have freedom to deform it more.
You have freedom to add more parameters, and you obviously will get better fits. Mm-hmm. But the lattice, you know, is the numerical fluctuation to the answer. Mm-hmm. And you can, in principle, control the errors theoretically.
That's right.
But so compete, you can't compete with
it. To be complimentary. But really, really, what experimentalists need is this.
I mean, the interesting question is, what does this teach you about the string, the QCD string theory? Right. I mean, that's what we'd like to know. What is the string theory that is mm-hmm. an exact representation of even Deuterian Mills? And have you learned anything about what?
About string theory?
What I learned? What is the string theory that's dual to non-supersymmetric Deuterian Mills theory?
Really not a lot, but I will say more.
What Kiforzi teaches you is that this particular static measurement doesn't seem very much of a string theory. That's why I mentioned the Lucian theory. Lucian theory comes from the transverse fluctuations of the string. Mm-hmm. With exquisitely careful work at large R, you can see it. Mm-hmm. It's a very small effect. Mm-hmm. So that's the first truly stringy effect that you actually see. Unfortunately, the static potential is almost immune to the most string effect.
Also, if you go to different n, not SU3, but other n, then the Coulomb term will have a different coefficient compared relative to the Lucia term. The Lucia term won't depend on n. The Coulomb term is a function of, it would be essentially the Twolf coupling. So I think you'll get an increasing mismatch between the 1 over r coefficient for the Coulomb term and the 1 over r coefficient for the Lucia term. They won't have, it's well known sort of that in SU3, we've known for a long time, that for some accidental reason, in the range of scales where one looks at, where one sees on a lattice this kind of approximate Coulomb behavior, the coefficient, the alpha, is such that it's roughly speaking quite close to the value of the Coulomb term. But it's not if you vary n.
Okay, now let me say how it surprises from this exercise. So as I told you, this deformation parameter is order of 1 GV squared, and what was found on the comparison with the lattice and with the meson spectrum, it gives the C is the same order, so it's around 1 GV squared. That looks quite interesting because this estimate, as I told you, comes from really from the Rohm meson rigid trajectory. So it seems that model more or less consistent. Then,
Can I ask a question?
The software model to get the rows, you need to introduce extra stuff.
Yeah. If I interpret the Rohm meson as coming from the Young-Mills in 5 dimensions.
Yeah, but that's more stuff. That's not just ADS. You need to say what happens to the soft wall for the Rohm meson to make sense.
No, no, but then, that's right, but then again, a solution of this 5 dimensional this equation gives you this rigid kind of spectrum. It's one of this gauge field will be interpreted as a Rohm meson.
But don't you have a Billerman coupling?
No, no, no. Oh, okay. If you do this soft model with deformed metric or with a deformed dilaton, it doesn't matter the level of F squared because you can redefine a dilaton into a metric or metric into a dilaton, just rescaling the metric bigger. It's the same model, it's not
the graviton spectrum, Lugo spectrum, and the Young-Mills spectrum. You know, there's some relation between them. Those make a difference.
No. Here's no global. And Rohm meson comes from the 5 dimensional Young-Mills.
Yeah, Rohm meson comes from 5 dimensional
Young-Mills,
but the gravity story.
That's right. But I don't discuss global. That's the right question, but to fix this coefficient, really, it's enough to just consider only the Rohm mesons. Okay, and then now, most interesting observation that this coupling G is order of 1. It's order of 1 in this exercise. So if G is a square root of the Toft coupling lambda, that means that the Toft coupling is also is order of 1. And if so, that means that the gate theory is neither strongly or weakly coupled. And that might be the reason why this kind of warp geometry has not been seen in supergravity. It certainly shows that we're out of supergravity approximation. Toft coupling is order of 1. That comes from. So it's right. Another question about the corrections. So certainly the alpha prime or 1 over n corrections to the potential. So a right question to ask whether this correction small or not, or at least how to compute them. It's absolutely not clear, but maybe some consolation happens, and then I don't know, because the theory at this level is not defined to compute this further correction. On another hand, I can say that it's what I'm doing looks like Landau-Ginzburg model and call it as a mean string theory approximation. It's not BCS, but Landau-Ginzburg for string. So, and I will happy this what I presented you. And then it's really big question whether it's possible to compute correction. Okay, next my example will be the baryonic potential in, from the five-dimensional perspective. And now a new thing comes into the game. So it's a typical baryonic Wilson loop for SU3. And to compute it, this Wilson loop exists. Okay, I will use now three Nambu-Goto actions because there are three strings, but also a new object. It's a baryon vertex. And this baryon vertex lives in the fifth dimension, so somewhere here in the bulk. And to find the expectation value of the Wilson loop, one has to found the minimal configuration for this three strings and this baryon vertex. And more over the baryon vertex is dynamical, so one has to worry also with respect to X naught, Y naught, and R naught. So there will be much more equations now. And indeed, there are seven equations and three free parameters, and analysis quite complicated in general case. But as an example, let me give you the most symmetric configuration, then means that quarks Q1, Q2, Q3 form an equilibrium rectangle like this one. And in this case, it's quite easy to solve, reduce this equation only like all that stuff looks like for the heavy quark potential only in two equations with one free parameter lambda. And there is a new parameter in the game, kappa. That kappa comes from the baryon vertex. So natural to interpret the baryon vertex as a point-like object in the fifth dimension. So I use this. And then mass of this particle is really a new parameter. So now there are 3+1 parameters. That's what we saw from the heavy quark potential, small c, z, and capital C, and new parameter kappa. And equation quite similar, except there is contribution from the baryon vertex. Let's see. And now how this configuration looks like. Potential looks like this one. And there is non-trivial dependence on the value of kappa at short distances. So for small values, certainly we have Coulomb behavior, and for larger distances, behavior is not Coulomb, but more non-trivial. And to fix this parameter kappa, I just will use some possibility to, like in Lattice gate theory, just to say that the coefficients in front of the Coulombic term at short distances for a three quark configuration is just half of that for quark anti-quark. If so, then it's possible to fix kappa, and then kappa is numerically around 0.02. And this is really this. Good. Now, let me just add additional remarks to this example. And then, in general case, it's possible to prove that for generic quark configurations like this, Q1, Q2, Q3, at large quark separations, what happens is potential looks like this one, free body interaction with the string junction exactly at the Fermat point for the triangle. That it's possible to show, so it's possible to prove the while law at large work separation. Moreover, it's possible to see that the string tension for three quark configurations is the same as for quark anti-quark pair. So it's the universality of the string tensions also easy to see. Then it's this picture can be easily generalized to the SUN case and see at least not while law but some generalization of it also. Moreover, I found that what I told you is also quite easy to generalize for the case of spatial baryonic loops. Spatial means that now instead of Euclidean time, evolution goes along a spatial direction, say x3. And in this case, it's also possible to compute not the potential baryonic, but pseudo potential, like in the case of quark anti-quark, and check the universality of special string tension, and even at finite temperature, and prove the while law for the pseudo potential at large quark separation. And my question is, to my knowledge, there's no latest simulation still for the pseudo potential, baryonic pseudo potential in the literature. So this method at least allows qualitatively get results much easier than the others. Okay, now let me give you the last example, hybrid potentials. First, I tell you a few words about hybrid mesons. So really, mesons looks like a quark anti-quark pair and string of flux between them. So it might be excited states of the flux tube that was discussed, for example, is Guren pattern. And then if one will found potential for this excited state of flux and substitute it into the Schrodinger or Salpeter equation, just absolutely simple way, instead of the heavy quark potential, it's common, just substitute this hybrid. What happens? Of course, one found that different meson spectrum. And here, just I borrowed the picture from Morningstar group, just show it why it's important. For B mesons, here is just what found using by the ordinary potential for the S and P waves. Experiment is magenta, here you see. And what found theory with the hybrid potential, this hybrid meson is here for two different hybrid potentials. So you see that at range above 10 GeV, it's quite important for experimentalists to know whether the hybrid meson is such a spectrum of masses. Otherwise, it will be different for them at least to see whether it's hybrids or not. It's still a controversial question, but theoretically, it's also important. And now, what is the excitation for the gluon flux tube? The excitation is from, again, from the Morningstar group like this one. So it's an ordinary potential, it's sigma. And this is excitations for hybrids. And then sigma G plus, it's nothing else but the standard potential. Lambda here is just projection of total angular momentum on the quark anti-quark axis. So this ground state has lambda zeros and pi has lambda one. Sigma has lambda zero and delta has lambda constant. So that was known for at least 10 years now, where four-dimensional string theory fails. Okay, let me just consider the energy gap. I took the data from the morning star, it's really there, just increasing. That's between the ground state, sigma g plus and sigma minus u. So what we have? We have this latest data. Here is just Lüscher-Weiss formula. And here is the square root Arvis formula. Four-dimensional string theory fails to reproduce at least this hybrid, sigma hybrid. Now, natural question, can strings in five dimensions save the day? Here it's tricky thing that I will consider that the ground state potential is just quark anti-quark power, and then excitation comes from really loop, flux loop, and then my assumption that this loops, it's quite small, and then finally I will approximate this as a point-like defect. It's clear that such an approximation fails at short distances because of finite size of this flux loop.
What about the transverse fluctuations? There's already levels before you do that. The string already has transverse fluctuations.
Yeah, but they, as I told you, point in five dimensions, it's this fluctuation included in geometry, as I told you. Yeah. That's the point here. Quantum fluctuation in four dimensions. Created for five-dimensional geometry.
I'm sorry, if you take a string, normal modes. Your normal modes can be in the hot space or in the first space. When you get a spectrum, which is like the spectrum that you just showed from the transverse fluctuation, those are states without the same.
Yeah, but again, you see, if I can reproduce the heavy quark potential from five-dimensional point of view, that means that this, at least, is the main point. This five-dimensional geometry knows about four-dimensional quantum fluctuations you want to add.
Go back to the curve.
Which
one? The curve in Morningstar and... No, the data from the
class. No, that's here.
No, it's like the full data was not.
Ah, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. If you go out toward large separation, these are precisely the classification of the transverse normal mode.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you not including this?
Is this n? N?
So you have transverse fluctuations in addition to this.
Which
putting this extra vertex in, you get this.
As I told you, just an example of the ground state. Point with five dimension is that quantum fluctuation included in five-dimensional geometry.
So you only look at the ground state.
Here is ground state. I discussed it before as example one. Now I'm discussing sigma for n equals 3 and n equals 4.
And you're including the transverse normals?
No. I'm trying to model this one. How to include it and whether equivalent to this approach. That's the question. So what happens if you include this mode? Happens something like this. You see, nothing good. Sorry. But can we really reproduce this blue curve for the sigmas, this five-dimensional approach? Okay, I will try to say that this excitation comes from this loop, and then finally it looks like point-like defect from the five-dimensional point of view. Certainly it's bad approximation at short distances, but still at larger distances it might not. And in this case, one has to add this baryon, anti-baryon vertexes and also two strings. But instead of doing that, I will just add something that looks like point, like defect, like particle in fifth or in 10 dimensions. So in this case, it's possible to find the potential in parametric form. And again, there are 3+1, 3 parameters, C, small, G, and C, that come from the ground state, the common potential, and then new parameter K, here, that comes from the defect, the characteristic of the defect. So now it's natural thing to see how it works, and what we see for sigma, we recently found. It works perfectly, this geometry. But if we go one level higher for sigma minus g, it fails at smaller distances, as I told you. That's probably this approximation when loop becomes small and then finally like point like defect fails. So it should be more complicated thing. Okay. Now, let me give you remarks. And then the main remark that this flux loop is quite tricky. So first point is that the baryon vertex really it's a D5 brain in 10 dimensions. I'm just doing 5-dimensional things. But if I will just take this account, I should tell you at least whether there is a non-trivial warp factor also for the internal space. And then this warp factor from the internal space will contribute into this term for the loop, flux loop. That's first point. The second point, that loop is nothing else than baryon anti-baryon vertex. So it's a bound state D5 D-bar 5 brain in 10 dimensions. And then a warning here is just what happens with this part, whether it's stable at short separations or it happens like tachyon condensation, it develops a tachyon mode and then really no short distance description. So from that point of view, calculation of the hybrids using this deformation is quite tricky and mysterious. Another remark is that, for example, Lüscher-Weiss formula includes the Coulomb term at short distances. But what we did has no Coulomb term. And then a possible answer, of course, is that this approximation, our approximation doesn't work really at short distances. So that means that when quark and anti-quark quite smaller than the size of this flux loop becomes compatible with the separation. So approximation breaks down, and from that point of view, one has to do better job in this stuff. Okay, that's I almost done with my examples in this five-dimensional alternative approach. Now let me conclude by giving you my global motivations, more or less. One gentleman is here. So I have been working on the strings and five dimensions and 10 dimensions, some modification and application to QCD, really starting from 2002. Its motivation was the paper by Joe Polchinski and Matt Strassler. But then I learned what, and completely agree what people say. So here is just what was already asked. Also here that I copied from talks and conferences. Yeah. And then I ask, it's really what we can learn about from QCD about string theory. That's, sorry, probably not a lot, but just about maybe backgrounds. And then now it's answer, of course, next question is what to do. It's also by the author of this. Yeah. And answer is also by him. That's what I'm doing. Calculate, and observe. David, so that's I'm using your transparencies, and now I'm saying what I'm doing. Calculate, and observe. So now I'm observer of string theory, not developer. Okay, and now next question, what to observe? That's okay, I also took from another gentleman. And answers by Sasha Polyakov. Also, really agrees about KCD.
Misanthropic, like that.
Okay, that's all. I'm done. Thank you.
One piece of lattice theory that you didn't talk about was the equation of state, the thermodynamics.
Yeah.
So if you take your background and try to solve the black hole
solutions.
Yeah,
works.
I know previous attempts they tried to get it to work, but they usually introduce some parameters and tune them to get to the right equation of state. So you're able to do this without fine-tuning parameters, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, moment. Here, you see,
with
thermodynamics, it's a tricky point. If you want to reproduce the equation of state for pure glue, for example, that first addition to this answer is number four. One has to suggest how to deform the internal space, because certainly if I will use the Bekenstein-Hogg formula for the entropy, that will contribute. And that's if I just use very the same deformation asymptotic as I use with this exponent. That's what I can reproduce for pure Young-Mills. I can reproduce more or less equation of the state in the interval for. And that's what comes from this deformation comes that in addition to the standard term, there is this term, and then I can see my information that was observed on the lattice, and even in phenomenology it was suggested by Olivier, I think. So it's reproduces, but again it's cost that I have to add here one, and that's for internal space, really from internal space.